The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning we are as close as your living room, because you can join us on Zoom or you can be here in the sanctuary. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing your spirit and transforming the world. I'm Linda Weaver. I'm the treasurer here at TPUF, Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, TPUF. And I'm a retired labor leader. Now, truthfully, I'm a retired teacher, but at some point in my career, I realized we needed to advocate for our children and for ourselves, and I became very active as a labor leader, and I was the president of the teachers, all 16,000 of them in Bucks and Montgomery counties, and I represented them for over a decade. So, wherever you are on your life journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you're visiting us today, welcome. And I know some of you signed cards when you came. But also, if you're on Zoom, there's a virtual visitor's card you can fill out as well. So the Soul Matters theme, and Soul Matters is a curriculum that we use to help guide us in our spiritual journey. The Soul Matters theme for September is belonging. Now, how appropriate is that on Labor Day to talk about unions? Because unions are all about belonging. So as I stand here before you today, I still am a union member. I was one for 42 years, and I still am one because the Pennsylvania State Education Association has this nifty little thing that you can, after you retire, you become PSEA retired. So I am still a union member, and probably, and will be until the day I die. As I was preparing for our service today and thinking about the labor movement and gender equality, I received a very interesting email from one of our members. They told me they were the great, great grandchild of George E. McNeil, who is known as the father of the 8-hour day. This was like receiving a message from when I heard that, because as a retired labor leader, I went, wow. Well, they agreed to tell us a little bit about him today. Has anyone guessed who that person is? The descendant of that great labor leader will now light our chalice with the help of Ryan McNeil.
We light the chalice this morning with words from Megan Visser. We enter this sanctuary for kindness and comfort. May rough, worn hands and aching backs be healed. We enter this sanctuary of hope for equality. May those who labor to survive live to know justice. We enter this sanctuary of love and vocation. May our bonds of solidarity be strengthened. We enter this sanctuary of courage and friendship. May we proceed hand in hand towards freedom. As we light the peace lamp, please respond with the words on the screen. May peace be with us.
So at this time, we're going to have the gathering song. Then we're going to read the book. We're going to have hymn number 128. Now, for those of you who were with us last week and really paying attention, okay, we sang this last week, but they took my labor song, okay? This is really a labor song. It's talking about working, and it's also talking about, I love these words. They're so powerful to me as an individual and as a leader. For all life is a gift which we are called to use to build the common good. So with no further ado, the words are going to appear on the screen. Please stand as you're willing and able, or remain seated as you wish. if our youngsters would like to come up and help, that'd be great. So when we have a story, we generally, you know, read it and we show it to the audience, but the people on Zoom can't really see the illustrations. So what we did was made a slide for each of the pages. So as we read, we're going to advance the slides. And I need help to do that. I need someone in my classroom, they would ring the bell and then we'd know to turn the page. But here, the bell is at home on my island. So we're going to shake the tambourine. Okay. How's that? Is that good? We're good to go. Ryan, you want to come up and help too? Thanks. I'm going to give you the tambourine first, okay? What? No one is going. Okay. Okay. Here's our first slide is up. Si se puede is the name of our story, and it's Yes, I Can. It is about the janitor's strike that occurred in LA, and I remember it. That's how old I am. Okay. Sleep with the angels, Carlitos, says Mama when she tucks me in. See you in the morning, I say, and close my eyes. While everyone sleeps, my mama goes to work. She rides the bus into downtown Los Angeles, where skyscrapers shoot up from the sidewalks. At night, the streets are empty. How did he do? Did he turn the stick? Is the slide different?
Yes.
Okay. It's quiet when my mama goes into the tall glass office building where she scrubs the bathroom tiles so they shine like the moon, cleans the tall glass windows so they are as clear as the lake where my papa taught us to swim, and mops and polishes the floors so smooth you could slide on them if you take off your shoes. After that, she sorts and dumps all the trash. The sun is ready to rise when she takes the bus home again to me. When I wake up, Mama is always in the kitchen talking to my abuelita. We all eat breakfast together. Abuelita fixes me a bean burrito for my lunch. When I'm ready, Mama walks me to the school bus. Sleep with the angels, Mama, I call out the window. Have a good day at school, she says. Then she goes back to bed. That's good. One night, Mama said, yeah. Do you know, Carlitos, I can't take care of you and your abuelito the way I want to. She sat me on her lap to explain. Even though I work full-time as a janitor, I also have to clean houses and wash clothes on the weekend. That means we don't have any time together, and I can't afford to buy the medicine abuelita needs to help her sore bones feel better. I looked at my abuelita, I looked at my mama, I looked at the family photos on the wall. My favorite was the one of her dressed in her wedding gown with my papa. When papa was still alive, we all lived in Mexico, the country where I was born. Carlitos, she said, to work so hard and get paid so little isn't fair. So today, all the janitors met outside the union hall and voted to stop working, to strike. We're going to let those offices get dirtier and dirtier and won't clean them again until we get the pay raises we deserve. But Mama, can you do that, I ask? That's just what I ask, she said. Can we do this? And all the janitors shouted back at the same time, Si, se puede, yes, we can. So tomorrow we're going on strike. And Carlitos, Mama said as she combed her fingers through my hair, for me to put my full heart into this, I'm going to need your help. I hugged my mama. I'll help you, I said. But in bed that night, I couldn't think of what I could do. When the strike began, Mama and all the other janitors marched, held rallies, and had lots of meetings. Our phone never seemed to stop ringing. Every morning, Mama read me the newspaper articles about the strike. She showed me photos of bus drivers, carpenters, ministers, and students all marching alongside the janitors. Where did they all come from, I asked. Mama's eyes lit up. So many people promised to help us, people from Los Angeles and from all over California. and even from other states came to take a stand with us. I cut out the photos to bring to school. Then I found out I wasn't the only one in my class with a parrot on strike. Maria's father is also in the union. They're from El Salvador. And Tino's mom, who's from Nicaragua, was out on the marches every day too. Our teacher, Miss Lopez, told our class that when her grandfather came to the United States, he was also treated very badly, just as if he wasn't a person. Grandpa and the other farm workers joined together to fight for a better life, just like the janitors are doing now. Did they win, I ask? You bet they won. When many people join together, they can make a strong force. Mama told me lots of different stories about the strike. So many people have come to support us. Today, a man came out of his building to join our rally. He said he never thought about the janitors who clean his office. But seeing you in this bright light of day, he said, means I can never ignore you again. And this afternoon, even Miss Lopez was there. As the sun set, we stood together and held candles in our hands. And in that silence, we didn't know how tired we were from marching all day. Instead, we felt the glowing light of our strength. The next night, I saw my mama on the news making a speech. Hundreds of people were marching behind her. That's when I knew what I could do to help. I'd go downtown too, but with a special surprise. The next day, Miss Lopez took some of the kids from my class on the bus to downtown Los Angeles. When Mama saw us, she was so happy she almost cried. As we marched, I held my sign as high as I could. An old man was playing the accordion. Maria's father took the trash can and played it like a big steel drum. Mama held soda cans filled with beans and shook them to the beat of the music. On the sidewalk, people rooted for us, for all of us marchers on the street. There were thousands and thousands of people all around me. I held on to Miss Lopez's hand. Carlos, she said, this is a celebration of courage. After 3 long weeks, the strike was over. My mama and the janitors finally got the respect and the pay raises they deserved. Carlitos, mama said, I couldn't have done it without you. She hung the sign I made on our living room wall. It's the most beautiful sign in the world. And you can see it says, what does that say? Can you read it? I know you can. All right. I love my mama. She is a janitor. That night, as always, my mama tucked me into, oops, I forgot to do that, didn't I? She tucked me into bed, sleep with the angels, Carlito, see you in the morning, I said, and closed my eyes. And that night I had a dream. When my mama took the bus to scrub, mop, and polish in the tall glass office buildings that shoot up from the streets, I dreamt that angels came down to Los Angeles and sang songs to her while she worked. Now my mama smiles a whole lot more. Abuelito's sore bones feel so much better. She walks with mama and me to school, the school bus in the morning. Mama no longer has to clean houses and wash clothes on the weekends. Instead, we go to the park, and on the way home, she lets me buy a palita or a churro from the man who sells sweets on the corner. One Saturday morning, the phone rang after we got home from the park. I'll be there, Mama said before she hung up. Carlitos, I have a promise I must keep, to be there when other workers need my help. Who needs your help, Mom, I ask. People who clean hotel rooms. So this afternoon, I'm going to meet them. But just as she was about to leave, I said, Mama, wait. I took down my sign from the living room wall and walked out with her. That afternoon, we joined the workers and marched up and down in front of the hotel. Mama and I met lots of new friends, and together we shouted, Si se puede. And that is how the workers in Los Angeles got their rights. That is a true story. Thanks, folks. Thank you to all my helpers. Now you can get up. Thank you. And as I try to get up, I say, si, se puede. Yes, I can get up. Whew. Okay. Okay, and now the iPad went off. Okay, so yes, let's sing them out. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere. Everywhere you may go. Okay, and now for the message. We're going to see the introduction slide with Frederick Douglass quote. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words, and that would be a collective bargaining agreement, or blows, or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. And that is, of course, Frederick Douglass. Today, we're going to talk briefly about the early days of the labor movement and where we stand today with the issue of gender equality. Cam Douglass will begin our message. Cam?
Morning. So as Linda's told you, George Edwin McNeil, I wish I had the tambourine for the first slide, please. I'll do a virtual thing. George Edwin McNeil is my great-great-grandfather. He is considered by many, including apparently the New York Times, to be the father of the eight-hour day. I've just listed in a bullet points a couple of his accomplishments. He wrote the charter for the National Labor Congress that took place in 1874. He is the founder of what was called at that time the International Working Men's Union, which obviously advocated for workers' rights. And he was the identified as the Massachusetts organizer for the American Federation of Labor, which of course is now known by many as the AFL-CIO. So tambourine shake. So how did his advocacy start? In 1852, he was a resident of Amesbury, Massachusetts. And there was a woolen mill in Amesbury, not surprisingly called the Amesbury Woolen Company. And there was a strike in 1852, and I'll tell you why in a second. But the work hours for many people in the town of Amesbury were employed by the mill, and it was a 14-hour workday. There was 30 minutes for breakfast, 45 minutes for lunch, and then two breaks each of 15 minutes in the morning, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And they hired a new gentleman who decided that it was necessary to eliminate the breaks in the morning and in the afternoon. I should tell you that George actually left school at age 10 to work in the mill in the carding room, which I don't know exactly what they do, but I can guess. So when that refusal of the breaks was put in place, 100 of the workers left the mill and went on their break regardless. When they returned, they were all told they were dismissed. And so the remainder of the workers who had not left decided that they were going to go out on strike to fight the idea that the breaks were being canceled and to try to lobby for workers' rights. So unfortunately, the woolen company prevailed in this particular instance. The workers did not get, the strike did not end in the workers' favor. And so this is probably one of the reasons that change came slowly. And it wasn't until 1867, though quite a few years later, that a whole lot of organizing and lobbying that took place between 1852 and 1867 finally led to state and federal legislation for the eight-hour day. And the problem was that alone didn't end it. A lot of the companies refused to acknowledge the fact that there was an eight-hour day and continued to force their workers to work longer hours. And so George was involved very much in trying to ensure that the labor laws were enforced. He was an arbiter sometimes between the companies and the workers. So he played a role very strongly in ensuring that the 8-hour day actually got implemented. So tambourine shake, please. His other real thing that sort of fits in with the theme that Linda spoke about is education. He wrote a report that was presented to the Massachusetts State Legislature in 1875 on the schooling of and hours of labor of children. And a couple of facts that are really startling, I think, are that less than 1/3 at that time of the factory children attended any form of school. And he found that in New York City at that time, 100,000 children were employed in New York factories, and some of them were as young as 5 years old. So I'm not going to read the quote, but the part that I kind of like is the part that says, "Ignorance and poverty are twin monsters, and education is a means of removing both." So he worked for, he said in this report, we must work for universal education, which didn't come for a while, but it was through writing, organizing, pamphlets, et cetera, that change came. So last slide. So he passed, as I said, in 1906, and the town of Amesbury took some time, but with vigorous lobbying from his father, George Leonard McNeil, a monument to George Edwin McNeil was erected in 1928. And the quote here, I think I will read this about his life and his commitment to labor and to rights. "Mr. McNeil's whole life was spent in a constant struggle for those who toil, to obtain better conditions of employment and a fairer, more decent, and more proportionate share of the profit from their toil. During his lifetime and because of his efforts, the 8-hour day became a reality." So the monument still stands, and in fact, the town of Amesbury, through a history teacher, there's an award given each year to students who are involved in civics in the elementary school, and it's named after George Edmund McNeil. So it's a nice family legacy to be part of. All right, I'll pass it on to Linda.
Thank you, Cam. Now you know why I was gaga, folks, because it was a big deal, a very big deal. You know, while I was prepping for this service, I came across so many disturbing images that I'm not going to share with you because I'm probably going to disturb you enough today. But and it was the child labor. When you see the children that are barely tall enough to stand up to the looms and, you know, they were working 14-hour days, change had to come. It had to come. So let's hear from Barack Obama. "It was the labor movement that helped secure so much of what we take for granted today. The 40-hour work week, the minimum wage, family leave," which, by the way, the minimum wage is still poor, terrible, in Pennsylvania and around the country. Family leave, health insurance, Social Security, Medicare, retirement plans, the cornerstones of the middle class security, they all bear the union label. And that was Barack Obama. "Working people in unions are dedicated to fair schedules, fair wages, access to affordable health care and child care, and paid leave for all working families and women who are disproportionately affected. Despite all the benefits and improvements brought about by the labor movement, one big challenge still exists, and that is the gender wage gap. The gender wage gap historically refers to pay discrepancies between men and women doing the same work. And there is also a racial wage gap. So if you are a person of color, a female of color, you are doubly whammied. So I'll talk to you a little bit more about that later, but you're probably thinking, well, as a teacher, you know, you have contracts, you're all paid the same. So what would I know about the gender wage gap? Let me tell you, I started teaching in 1974. And it was common practice to pay you for extracurricular activities. So if you sponsored yearbook, or if you were a department chair, or if you were a coach, you got extra pay in your paycheck. And at the time I was making $6,800 a year. And I would have been happy to be able to get some of that pay. But those positions were reserved for men. And it was commonly accepted. We knew it, we were told it, and it was accepted. I'm happy to say now that through the title programs and lots of other programs and just basic fairness and awareness, that has changed. We now have female coaches who are coaching sports other than female sports. We now have female department chairs. There was, in the first 10 years of my teaching, there was never a female department chair at the secondary level of the science or the math department because women weren't good at that. Yes, I know, I see your faces. So yes, the gender wage gap still exists. It probably dates back to the beginnings of civilization, but it emerged as a political issue in the United States in the 1860s under the rallying cry of equal pay for equal work. Among the movement's most vigorous advocates were women's rights activists, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who made a case for bridging the wage gap in their newspaper, The Revolution, and other works. Women eventually won the right to vote in the United States with the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution in 1920. Nevertheless, the wage gap still persisted. The next major attempt to address the inequity on a national level came two decades later with the passage of the Equal Pay Act in 1963. It prohibited employers from paying male and female workers different wages for jobs. For jobs, the performance of which requires equal skill, effort, and responsibility, and which are performed under similar working conditions. However, it did allow for several exceptions, including pay structures based on seniority and merit. So you can understand how that can help perpetuate some of the inequities because the women were the last hired and often the first fired. Okay, so let's see the slide with the dollar bill. So this is a little bit inaccurate because we have made some advances. So for every dollar that's now paid to men, women earn 83 cents. So we have come up, yes. And our next slide is, this is Rachel Thomas, the co-founder and CEO of leanin.org. And she says, and I love this as a woman of color, I'm seeing, again, here's that double whammy. The gender pay gap continues to impact women's long-term economic security and well-being. Since 1985, the gap has only closed by 18 percentage points. That's glacial. At this rate, it will take more than 40 years to close the pay gap. For Black and Latino women, it will take more than a century. What this means is that my daughter and my daughter's daughter's daughter will not see pay equity in their lifetimes. Women earn less than men in almost every occupation. That's true for female-dominated professions and for male-dominated professions. And you know, women are breadwinners. In fact, 42% of working women in the United States are the sole breadwinner for their families. So the pay gap not only affects women, but their families as well. Employers need to recognize the time all working families need to care for their loved ones. And we need laws that acknowledge the challenges that working families face. So you're probably wondering, well, why does wage gap exist? And there are a lot of factors. Some of it is the number of hours worked, because some women work part-time so that they can also care for their family, the presence of children, and also your level of education. The types of jobs men and women hold and the earnings difference among these occupations also contribute to gaps in overall earnings. The gender gap in pay has remained relatively stable in the United States over the past 15 years or so. In 2020, women earned, now we're getting better, 84% of what men earned, according to the Pew Research Center. And based on that estimate, it takes an extra 42 days of work for women to earn what men earned in 2020. So it still exists. Some of it is explained, but why is it getting better? It is getting better. It is getting better glacially. Well, it's getting better because there are more women in higher paying jobs now that were traditionally dominated by men, such as professional and managerial positions. Women as a whole continue to be overrepresented in lower paying occupations relative to their share of the workforce. So that's the yin and yang of it. That's what's keeping it. It's elevating it, but yet holding it back. And again, motherhood can also lead to interruption in women's career paths, and they have an impact on long-term earnings, and that is a choice. Well, it was a choice that women had. A 2016 survey of workers that were taken that had taken parental, family, or medical leave in the 2 years prior to the study found that mothers typically take more time off than fathers after birth or adoption. And that makes sense. The median length of leave among mothers after the birth or adoption of their children was 11 weeks, compared with 1 week for fathers. So you can see how that would also impact a woman's career choice and her earnings capacity. I'm not going to talk to you too much more about statistics other than to say the pandemic has been horrific for women. We're not in a good place right now. And I fear that things are at best stalled or at worst declining. Women suffered more layoffs and job losses during the pandemic because so many work in retail and service jobs. And many other women were forced to quit. They quit their jobs because they had caregiving demands. So as we begin the economic recovery plans, we need to address the systemic issues that are causing the gender pay gap. Until COVID-19, women were making major strides, but the pandemic has rolled back all the hard-earned progress. We now need to double down on our efforts and demand change. And that change is coming. I remember when I was a member of NEA, and Barack Obama actually came to speak to us about what he was going to do during one of his first acts when he became president. And that had to do with the 2007 US Supreme Court case, Ledbetter versus Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. Lily Ledbetter worked for Goodyear, and she sued her employer under the Civil Rights Act, alleging that it had underpaid her for 19 years. Well, guess what? She won. She won her case. The jury agreed with her, and they awarded her more than $3.5 million. But Goodyear appealed, and they argued that she had failed. Well, it may have been true, but she failed to file her suit within the 180 days that were required by law, so from when the discrimination first occurred. So because it was ongoing for 19 years, they wiggled out of it. And the Supreme Court ruled against Ledbetter in a 5-4 vote. Once again, another reason to be thankful to the Supreme Court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in dissension, suggested it was now a matter for Congress to take up. I loved her. She said to them, you know what? You're legally correct, but morally you're wrong. So Congress, fix this. So they introduced the Paycheck Fairness Act. It was first introduced, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. And they passed it in 2009, and that expanded the time period for filing a discrimination claim. It was the first piece of legislation signed into law by then President Barack Obama just 9 days before his inauguration. Now, the first major legislative proposal to address the wage gap is the Paycheck Fairness Act. Let me tell you where that is, folks. It was first introduced in 2009, and among other things, it calls for greater enforcement of anti-discrimination laws and increased penalties for violators. The Paycheck Fairness Act initially passed the U.S. House, but it failed in the U.S. Senate. In the years since, it has been reintroduced many times, most recently in 2021. And you guessed it, it passes in the House and it fails in the Senate. So, where are we today? We need to pass the Paycheck Fairness Act. That needs to happen, and that will only happen with a change in the Senate. So we know what we have to do. So in conclusion, while women's and men's earnings, and if someone would want to go get Corinne, I know she's going to want to extinguish the chalice. While women's and men's earnings may shift slightly each year with each new batch of Census Bureau data, the gender gap will not close anytime soon without concerted effort and legislative action. Efforts to close the wage gap must address the varying drivers of it, as well as the multitude of biases that hold women particularly women of color, LGBTQ women, and women of other diverse identities, and their families back. This is an issue of economic security and equality, and women and their families cannot afford to wait for either. So, with that, it's time for Matters of the Heart. John, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay, we've come to that time of our service, which we set aside for people to share a joy that is lifting them up or a sorrow that is bringing them down with the overall community to increase the volume of that joy or lessen the pain of the sorrow. In a minute, we are going to open things up for both people here in the sanctuary as well as people at home on Zoom. But first, we're going to have a brief musical interlude. This is a musical interlude that has been written and performed by Isaac Strader. So take a minute or two to gather your thoughts. And when the interlude is completed, I will come back up and give you some more instructions on how to participate in Matters of the Heart. Bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. In just a second, the
words, and the people show up in the video on your screen.
New to TPUF, okay? We like to mix it up, don't we, folks? We don't want to be bored, but we do want to talk about important issues. So I could have played the Dolly video, but it's not going to be that. It's going to be the words and the music. So feel free to sing along. Rock on. Let's go.
Out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping, out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way. On the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. You're on the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind.
In case you haven't guessed it, Dolly has nothing to worry about from me. That's why I've stayed a teacher and not a singer. But now, Corinne, it's your moment up here. Can you help me here? Can I get a hand here? Corinne is going to extinguish the chalice while I share these words from Hubert Humphrey, you may have heard of him, and Robert F. Gray. The flame is extinguished, but not our hope for the future, our courage in the face of crisis, or the love we all share in the world. The story of the labor movement needs to be taught in every school in this land. America is a living testimonial to what free men and women organized in free democratic trade unions can do to make a better life. We ought to be proud of it. Boy, have times ever changed, folks. I would never, and just thinking about the story that I read to you, if teachers now were to take their students to a march, a labor march, they'd be fired. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. Yeah. So, Corinne, would you extinguish our chalice, please? And now our peace lamp. Thank you very much.